know, back in the 90s, I knew this guy who was HIV positive, and he sent me a whole ton of literature on AIDS. And there was one sentence that just slapped me in the face in all these, you know, page after page of documents about AIDS. And one of them is was the sentence, eliminate false hope. And that really slapped me in the face. And I thought about that a lot. And I thought about the importance of false hope for maintaining abusive systems and maintaining harmful systems. And, you know, my father was extremely abusive and, you know, broke my sister's arm. And my brother has epilepsy from blows to the head, and he raped my mother, my sister, and me. And one of the reasons that my mother stayed with my father is because there weren't battered women shelters in the 50s and 60s. She had nowhere to go. And another reason is because of the false hope that he would change. And that's what false hopes do. They bind us to unlivable situations, and they blind us to real possibilities. So we could do an entire video on listing false hopes of the false hope that solar is going to save the day, or that solar is actually helpful for the planet. The false hope that if we just get a Democrat back in the White House, things will be okay. The false hope that somehow capitalism will fix the problems that capitalism has created, or technology will fix the problems that technology has created, or that civilization will fix the problems that civilization has created. Those are all false hopes. False hopes are the stock and trade of abusive systems. The false hope that there will be pie in the sky when you die. And Christianity has been a wonderful, the notion of heaven has been a wonderful means to maintain oppressive systems because, well, things may be terrible now, but someday you will get that pie in the sky. I think often of something the Nazis did, which was quite brilliant, which was they would make what some of the Jews called brainbusters, which is that they would hand out different colored identification cards. And so instead of worrying, instead of trying to escape the whole system, the Jews who were offered these choices might be then wondering, do I want a red ID card or a blue ID card? Which one's going to help me better? Neither one helped. Should I write down as my vocation that I'm a shoemaker or that I'm a metalsmith? It doesn't matter. They're going to get you the same way. But if they get you spending your time trying to figure out whether I will be better served by a red or blue identity card, then you won't be, you'll be pacified for that much longer. So that's false hope is an epidemic. It's not an epidemic. It is endemic to abusive situations. It is one of the tools used often, and it is also epidemic that we think that if we can just change the regulations a little bit, things will be okay. And we refuse to see the larger pattern. So that's false hope. So I think we can all see how false hopes need to be eliminated. And I mean, it's true in all sorts of interpersonal relationships. You know, we can stay in a terrible relationship because we just have the false hope that there'll be a change. If we see one little itty bitty change in the right direction, we think, oh, okay, now everything's going to be okay. And one little itty bitty change can inoculate you against an extended period of more of the same harmful behavior. So I think we can agree that in most cases, false hope is not helpful. And I'm putting in most cases because I think there are some cases where false hope can be actually quite appropriate. And one of the cases I'm thinking of is if you are actually honest to goodness powerless. If you are actually honest to goodness powerless, a false hope can sustain your sanity. I had students when I taught at the prison who were serving life without parole. And a lot of them would talk about how, you know, when I get my next appeal written up, things are going to change. And everybody, including they, knew that their appeal didn't have a chance of accomplishing anything. But that kept them, it gave them a way to survive the day because they actually were powerless. And likewise, this is one reason that religion, many people in prison find religion because it gives them a way to survive the unlivable situation where they actually are powerless. And so that's false hope. But I think that it's not only false hope, but I think part of the problem is hope itself. And I was doing a talk 12, 13 years ago, and I'm bashing hope. And then somebody in the audience shouts out, "What's your definition of hope?" And it's like, I have no idea. I've been bashing it for years. I have no idea what I'm talking about. So I asked them if they could define hope. And the audience came up with a great definition, which is hope is a longing for a future condition over which you have no agency. That's what it is. That's how we use it in everyday language, that the next time I get on a plane, I hope it doesn't crash, because once it's in the air, I have no agency. There's nothing I can do. That's one reason that for many of us, airplanes are more terrifying than automobiles, even though there are actually more deaths per automobile mile than deaths per airplane mile, because once it's in the air, I don't have a choice. But if I'm driving, I can drive 2 miles an hour. I can not do certain things, and I can control that. I remember reading decades ago, this is probably 25 years ago, I remember reading in a book, Whose Common Future, by the ecologists. They were talking about how various subsistence farmers in Africa were going to have to live with a factory that was going to put in that was going to raise the rates of cancer. And the people from the corporation said this is ridiculous for them to worry about it, because the rate at which cancer will go up because of the factory is less than the background rate of cancer from them having wood fires for their cooking. And they're actually having a higher rate of cancer than that, and that will be the addition from the people in the ecologist wrote, well, this is really absurd for a couple reasons. One is they're actually gaining a benefit from the cook stove, and they're not going to gain a benefit from the factory. So they're actually making rational choices, marginal cost versus marginal return of cooking, of having a fire. And also, they can control the fire. They can't control the factory. So they can choose to not have a fire. They can choose to have a fire. So that's it. We can manage our own risk that way. Anyway, so the point is that once I'm in the plane, then I hope it doesn't crash. On the other hand, I don't hope that I eat dinner this evening. I'm simply going to do it because that's in my control. I can choose to eat dinner. I can choose to not eat dinner. I was talking to a friend several years ago and about hope, and she was saying, so are you telling me I can't hope that my brother survives cancer? And I said, no, I'm not telling you that at all. What I'm saying is you can't stand there with car keys in your hand and say to your brother, I hope you make it to the hospital. This question of, here's another way this question of hope, I'm going to go back to this. Hope is a longing for a future condition over which you have no agency. Once again, that's how we use it in everyday language. That I was doing a talk one time, and I was saying all this, and my mom happened to be in the audience, and somebody shouted out something about, so what would your mom have said had you tried this when you were a kid? And I said, and my mom's right here. So I said, Mom, if I were 8 years old and you said that I need to clean my room, and I said, well, I hope the room gets clean, what would you have said? And my mom just started laughing, and she said, I would have said, yeah, you better hope it gets clean. And the point is that, oh, I was doing it in another talk. I said that example. And this little like 7-year-old in the audience shouted out, somebody has to clean the room. And like, that's the point. And so when we go to the larger scale, we suddenly get really stupid and we start going, gosh, I hope salmon survive. But when people say, I hope salmon survive, they're not really saying they hope salmon survive. What they're saying is that they hope that salmon survive as long as we don't have to stop industrial logging, stop industrial fishing, take out dams, stop global warming, and stop the murder of the oceans. And that's a ridiculous hope, and it's killing the salmon, and it's killing everybody. People say, gosh, I hope this culture doesn't kill the world. Gosh, I hope that global warming stops. You know, it's pretty straightforward. There are, yes, there are feedback loops, but the mechanism of global warming has been understood at least since about the 1830s, that if you burn carbon, you end up with more carbon in the atmosphere, which leads to a greenhouse effect. So understanding this, does this mean that there are less actually carbon, there's less actually carbon emitted every year? No, of course not. We're simply saying we hope that this or that thing fixes it. But that's not how hope works. So when people say, a lot of people have gotten very upset when I say, when I bash hope. And that's based on a fundamental misunderstanding. They think that hope is all good things. But the truth is that I'm defining it once again very precisely. Hope is a longing for a future condition over which you have no agency. And what I'm really interested in is figuring out where we do and don't have agency. And we have agency over whether dams stand. We can choose to not take them out. We can choose to take them out. We have agency over whether there are trees along the side of a river to keep it cooler. We're not talking strictly physical processes. We're talking social processes. We're talking decisions made by people. Why do we understand so clearly that the Germans chose to kill the Jews, the Slavs, the homosexuals? And we somehow don't see that this culture is choosing to kill the world. And so what is possible when we give up on hope? What is possible only when we give up on hope is to stop relying on the system, the abusive system, to fix itself, and to recognize that a miracle is not going to save us. And the only miracle that we're going to get is us. That doesn't mean that there is no role for hope. I got a letter from a very smart Indigenous woman several years ago in which she was saying, what is the role of prayer? And what is the role of hope? And the example she laid out, if she and I both agreed that if you hope that salmon survive, but you don't take out the dams and you don't stop the industrial logging and everything else, that this is an obscenity. It is blasphemy in that you are making a prayer without arranging the conditions such that this prayer can come true. You have to put yourself in a position where it can come true. So what she said, which I thought was brilliant, is that yes, you take out the dam. Yes, you stop industrial logging. Yes, you stop all those harmful activities. And you offer those as a prayer to the river. And then what you have to do is you have to hope that the river accepts your prayer. And you have to hope that the river is able to come back. And that is something on which I am able and willing to hope. And the same is true on the larger global warming scale, that yes, runaway global warming is in process. And I know that if this culture continues, the world could very well be made uninhabitable for anyone. And I also have a hope, and I mean that precisely, that if we are able to destroy industrial civilization, it is possible that forests and prairies could sequester carbon enough to blunt the worst of runaway global warming. What I know is that if we don't try, we will never know. And if we do try, the world may accept our prayer. So the key to all this really is that I don't care, and I don't think salmon care, and I don't think frogs care what we wish. I think what's important and what is always most important are the physical conditions in the real world. And wishing and your state of mind in general are not going to change the real physical conditions. What changes real physical conditions is real physical action. And as long as we hope that somebody or another is going to do the work, it's not going to get done. It's like that child said, somebody's got to clean the room, and somebody has to clean up these messes, and somebody has to stop this culture from killing the planet. And so long as you are hoping that some great glorious thing will happen to make that somehow occur, you know, it makes me think of a line that a coach said to me an athletic coach said to me in college, which is, a goal without a plan is a wish. And it's like, the question is, how are you going to get from point A to point B? What are the tangible steps you have to do? And as long as you're hoping and praying that it happens, it's not going to happen. So give up on, there's a wonderful thing happens when you give up on hope, which is that you realize you never need it in the first place. Another thing that happens when you give up on hope is you realize that the great Democratic Party is not going to save you, and that technology is not going to save you, and that you need to do the work yourself. And no one's going to rescue you. So get to work.